This meeting will come to order. Good to see all of you. This is an informational meeting on standardized student testing as presented by the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And we will hear the report and then have time for discussion. We also have Jennifer Dugan here from the department. She is the testing expert. So if we have technical questions or some really specific questions on our actual testing, Ms. Dugan will be happy to testify and to reply to our questions. Welcome, Office of the Legislative Auditor. Great to have you here, and thank you again for your work. And please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall. I am the Deputy Legislative Auditor for OLA's Program Evaluation Division, and it's a pleasure to be here yet again this session. I feel like we've been here quite a bit, so thank you for giving us so much time in your schedule this year. Today we are here to talk about our evaluation on standardized student testing. It's an evaluation we released last week. I know student testing is a topic that the legislature hears quite a lot about, and I know you spend quite a lot of time talking about it. It's also something that schools think a lot about, in part because they spend a lot of time administering these tests. Today you'll hear from Mr. Kochner that more than half of Minnesota schools spend more than 3 weeks administering the state standardized tests. Those tests are the MCAs and the Access Test for English Language Learners. You'll also hear that more than 300 schools spend more than 5 weeks administering these tests. So it's a significant share of the school year. So what takes so long? Why are schools spending so much time administering these tests? And as these things typically go, there are a number of different reasons. But one of the key reasons is that the test must be administered by computers. And as you probably know, schools have limited technological resources. So schools have to rotate their students maybe through their computer labs or through their set of computers to take these tests. And, of course, while students are using the computers for tests, the school can't use those computers for other learning opportunities for the other students in the school. So schools and students spend a significant amount of time administering or taking the tests. Are they worth it? Are the tests useful? And to that question, our answer is, well, it depends. Depends on what you're looking for out of the test. The tests are primarily useful for the state to evaluate whether or not, on average, a school's students are meeting the state standards. And that's important. But over time, the legislature has looked to do more and more with those tests. For example, do adaptive testing with above and below grade testing. And for those efforts, those legislative efforts, we would say the results are, it's been less successful. In other words, we think we're maybe trying to do too much with this one test. So that's kind of the high level overview. And to get down into the details, to talk more about the findings and recommendations, I'd like to now turn to David Kirchner, who is the manager for this evaluation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome, Mr. Kirchner, and please introduce yourself and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is David Kirchner. I was the project manager for this evaluation, and before I get started, I would like to acknowledge the other members of the project team, Caitlin Badger and Katie Reed. Their hard work is absolutely reflected in the presentation I'm going to make to you today. I'm going to start real quick with an overview of our key findings, and then I'll get into a little more detail. As Ms. Randall said, administering standardized tests required by the state creates significant logistical challenges for schools, and those challenges strain school resources and affect student instruction, both students taking the tests and students not taking the tests. The local use of these test scores varies quite a lot from one district to the next, from one charter school to the next. And we found that local educators' familiarity with testing data varied quite a lot. Thirdly, some of the requirements in law, some of the legislative mandates regarding testing, we feel are a bit too prescriptive, and we think that the legislature should change those or at least reconsider them. So let me start off with a little bit of brief background. As I'm sure many of you know, the Congress passed the Every Student Succeeds Act in 2015. That new federal law, which replaced No Child Left Behind, did not change the testing requirements that states must meet. States still have to test the same students that they had to test before. However, it removed some of the penalties for low-performing schools that had been part of No Child Left Behind. At this point in time, we're in somewhat of a transition period, both because of the newness of the law and because we have a new presidential administration in Washington. And so it's a little unclear at this point how some of the portions of that law will be interpreted going forward. But in any case, MDE is putting together a state plan to meet the requirements of the new law. As you may be aware, Congress overturned some of the regulations associated with the ESSA, with the Every Student Succeeds Act, last week. However, those regulations that were overturned do not affect which test states must give. They had to do with the accountability portion of the law. And what the federal government says about which tests must be given is rather important because that drives what happens in Minnesota. Minnesota does not require a whole lot of tests beyond those that are required by federal law. There are two exceptions. Minnesota does require the use of a literacy test for students in younger grades, kindergarten through second grade, and that is locally chosen. That is, school districts and charter schools can choose which test to administer to meet that requirement. And the state requires that schools administer a nationally recognized college entrance exam to 11th and 12th graders if they want to take it. It's optional for the students, but schools are required to offer that opportunity. Even though there are not specific additional testing requirements beyond those two, there are a number of requirements in state law about how the state gives the tests, how the state delivers them, how the state scores them, and I'll talk a little bit more about those later. The two tests that Minnesota uses to meet the federal requirements, the first one is perhaps the most well-known, the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments, or the MCAs. This test tests all students in selected grades. I have them listed up on the slide here. It's basically grades 3 through 8 for math and reading and one high school grade, and then for science it's 5th grade, 8th grade, and one high school grade. And all of these tests, as Ms. Randall said, are administered by computer, except for those students that need particular accommodations due to a disability. The second set of tests that Minnesota uses to meet the federal requirements are the access tests. And these tests are given to students who are English language learners. This is a federal requirement that these students be tested. There are four access tests, and students take all four of them if they're identified as English learners. And they take them in all grades. As long as they're identified as an English learner, no matter what grade they're in, K through 12, they take these tests. These are mostly also administered by computer. A couple of the ones in the younger grades are administered on pencil and paper. And I should point out that English learners also take the MCAs in addition to the access tests if they're in the grades that are tested by the MCA. So those students take both tests. There are alternate tests that Minnesota uses for students that have severe cognitive disabilities, and I want to mention those. The alternate for the MCAs is the Minnesota Test of Academic Skills. For the access, it's the alternate access test. These are not administered by computer. These are administered one-on-one with a teacher or other trained educator working with each student. About 1.5% of Minnesota students currently take these tests instead of the more standard tests. In addition to the state-required tests, many school districts and charter schools also use tests that they adopt locally that are not required by the state. Now,
Mr.
as Kirchner, I mentioned,
I'm going to interrupt you for a minute so I can call the meeting officially to order. Representative Erdahl moves approval of the minutes for March 9.
Great minutes.
Are there any discussions, any discussion or corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Representative Erdahl, so nice that you could approve the minutes.
Thank you.
I was waiting for you. please proceed, Mr. Kirchner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I was saying, there are, in addition to the state-mandated test, the test that local school districts and charter schools choose to use as well. As I mentioned, some of these are to meet a state requirement, those for the younger students, the reading test for the younger students. But in addition to that, many school districts and charter schools use tests beyond just those early grade tests for their own local purposes. And we surveyed all principals, we surveyed a sample of principals and teachers in the state. And more principals and teachers found those locally adopted tests to be useful than found the state's tests to be useful. We also heard from a number of different quarters interest in having these tests replace the MCAs. We did not find that that seemed to be very plausible, at least for the time being. There's a very clear federal requirement that the state tests that the state uses for accountability purposes, those tests have to be aligned with the state standards, and most of these locally adopted tests probably would not meet the strict federal requirements for alignment unless they were modified in some way. However, as I said, we are now moving forward under a new presidential administration, a new interpretation of the federal law, so some of that may remain to be seen. I will note, however, that one of the things probably that makes these tests more popular among principals and teachers and other educators is their convenience and flexibility, and part of the reason that they're more convenient and more flexible is that they don't actually have to meet the federal requirements. So it might be the case that if they began meeting the federal requirements, they would be somewhat less appealing than they are now. We took a close look at how the Department of Education interacts with the testing vendors that it uses. NDE uses outside entities to design, distribute, and score the tests that it uses. And generally, we found that NDE was doing a pretty decent job with this. We felt that they had an appropriate selection process. They were pretty rigorous. They have a pretty decent oversight process. The vendors don't always do exactly what they ought to be doing, but when they are not doing that, NDE is catching them and making them change it or pay penalties as need be. So we generally do not have a lot of complaints there. We did feel that NDE could do a slightly better job at assessing the local satisfaction of districts and charter schools with the performance of its vendors. The MCA vendor is Pearson, is a private company. The Access vendor, I should point out, is a nonprofit and is it's actually a consortium. Minnesota is one of 35 states that is a member of this consortium. And because of that, NDE does not have the same control over the vendor that it has over the vendor for the MCAs, because if NDE was unhappy, it would have to find a whole bunch of other states that also use the test that are unhappy in the same way in order to change that test. So Minnesota has less control there. We obtained and analyzed information on how much time students spent testing. We pulled data on every single student in the state that tested using a computer. And we found that for individual students, most students do not test for inordinately long periods of time. The median student taking two MCA tests takes just over 3 hours total. The median student taking three MCAs, that would be math, reading, and science, takes about 4.5 hours. But that amount of time varies quite a lot based on grade and based on test. We have a chart in the report, I think you have the report with you, on page 49, that if you want to look at that detail in much, that information in much more detail, we have it broken down quite a lot more on that chart there. I do want to point out that English learners spend more time testing than other students, and we thought that was significant, not just for those students in taking the MCAs, but also to note that those students, in addition to the MCAs, also take those four English proficiency tests that I pointed to before. So those students are spending significantly longer taking tests than other students. As I said, at the individual level, students aren't taking a bunch of time to take the test, but at the school level, it's a different story. At the school level, as Ms. Randall pointed out at the start of the presentation, schools are spending a lot of time giving these tests, and often this is due to resource constraints, that it just takes a lot of time to move students through the computer infrastructure that schools have available. I have a chart up here on the slide showing how much time schools spend to give tests. And you can think of each bar, if you like, as being a week, because the first bar is 1 through 5 days, the second bar is 6 through 10, the third bar is 11 through 15, and so forth. So as you can see from the chart, a lot of schools are spending more than 3 weeks, more than 4 weeks, sometimes even more than 5 weeks, administering the standardized test required by the state. And this is just the MCA, so this does not include the access tests as well. We have a separate chart for that in the report. When schools are taking this much time to administer tests, it has impacts. And it has impacts on staffing, it has impacts on resources. Teachers, principals, counselors, whoever is involved in administering the tests, they often have to limit their regular responsibilities in order to deal with the administration of the tests. And this affects both the students that are taking the tests and non-testing students as well. because those staff members are not able to carry out or have to be limited in how they carry out their regular responsibilities. We found that students in special education and students that are English language learners were particularly affected, and that's in part because these students are often provided services by specialists who move among different classrooms and go from one classroom to the next. And if those students are tied up, for example, administering tests to third and fourth graders, they can't do their pullouts with the first and second graders, even though the first and second graders aren't taking the MCAs. So those we felt were a particular point to note. Nearly one in five districts that we surveyed told us, or other districts and charter schools that we surveyed, told us that they hire additional staff specifically in order to administer or to analyze information from the state's tests. There are significant impacts on the resources that schools have available. When schools are using their computers to administer tests, those computers are not available for regular instruction. And it might not even just be the instance of the computers in a school's computer lab. Sometimes schools have additional computers available, but they have limited bandwidth, either wireless bandwidth or internet bandwidth. And so the schools have to limit the use of computers elsewhere in the school while testing is going on in order to protect that bandwidth for the use of the students that are testing. And there are costs involved as well. Schools and charter schools have to keep their computers upgraded in working order. Sometimes they have to purchase particular software or particular equipment in order to administer the tests. We found that over 80% of charter schools and school districts reported buying additional equipment or software that they specifically to administer the state standardized tests at some point in the last 3 years. So we have some broad recommendations stemming from all of these observations. And generally they're about measurement and understanding what is going on. We feel that MDEs should be doing more to systematically measure the local impacts of testing and the local costs. At this point, we would not have a particularly good way, even if MDE or the legislature put into place changes, we would not have a good way of measuring whether or not those changes have made any difference, because we're not measuring right now whether how much effort is going into administering these tests. And so we suggest that MDE work with school districts and charter schools to come up with ways to measure some of these local impacts so that we can have a better understanding of what the impacts are, and we can have a clear understanding of what changes when we make changes at the state level, either through MDE policymaking or legislative changes. However, we do have a caveat in there. We do think it's important that that process of measurement be a collaborative process between the department and folks at the local level, because the last thing we need is for the measurement itself to produce additional challenges during the testing window that exacerbate the issues that we already found. I'm going to pivot away and talk a little bit about the uses of test scores. There are a number of different ways in which test scores are used at the state level. Clearly, the most obvious is that the test scores are published and they are used as a means of information provided to local parents, to local stakeholders, to the legislature about how our schools are doing in educating students under the state standards. Additionally, the test scores are used for schools that are receiving certain types of federal funding. They have to put into place plans to address low test scores. And test scores are part of the world's best workforce measures, the district-level accountability system that the legislature put into place a couple of years ago. There is actually a specific amount of money that is tied to test scores, the state literacy aid, and that's tied specifically to test scores in reading at the third and fourth grade level to promote better literacy at the younger grades. At the local level, we found that uses vary quite a lot. In some school districts and charter schools, they make heavy use of the test scores, and they play an important role in curriculum planning, in decisions that are being made about spending, and so forth. In other school districts and charter schools, we found they're not used much at all. It really varies from one location to the next. Perhaps one of the reasons for that variation has to do with the fact that many educators, we found, are not actually all that comfortable interpreting and using the state's test score data. I have a question up here on the slide from a survey that we administered to principals and teachers. We asked overall or we ask them to agree or disagree with the statement. Overall, I feel sufficiently prepared to interpret test scores. And as you can see from the slide, only 3 out of 4 principals, which is a lower number than we expected, said that I feel prepared to interpret NCA scores overall. And for teachers, that number was below 60%. For the access scores, the numbers are much lower. And I want to point out that on the right-hand side of the slide there, those numbers for the access scores, those are only for teachers and principals that had English learners in their schools. So that's not the case that what you're seeing there is a bunch of principals and teachers that don't interact with English learners. And they're still not as comfortable with the test scores. So we have a broad recommendation to the department that it increase its outreach to school districts and charter schools regarding the use of test scores. Right now, what the department does is fairly focused on school districts, or rather I should say schools and charter schools that have very low test scores, and it works to help those. But we found the need was much broader than that, and we think that NDE should see if it can do more to help out with this interpretation and use of the test scores. I want to come back to what I talked about at the beginning of the presentation. We have some concerns with some laws that are on the books with regard to testing, and we feel that some of these laws are just a bit too prescriptive. And I'm going to talk about 3 of them here. First of all, in state law, there is a specific statistical formula for how the state should measure growth. And NDE uses a almost the same thing. It's a slightly different version of it because that's what they put into their waiver request from a couple of years ago. But in general, we think it's unwise to put a specific statistical formula listing the, you know, it's half of a standard deviation above or below the mean, to put that into state law. We think it's probably wiser for the legislature to give the department a little broader charge and let the department figure out what the best use is. The tests may change over time. Expert opinion on the best way to measure growth may change over time, and at the moment they're tied to the specific formula that's in law. So we have that as a suggestion. We have some concerns with the career and college readiness scores that are required by state law. These are the scores that indicate whether a student is on track to be college ready by the time that they end high school. And our concern here is that these scores are required in law to be provided for all students that are taking the NCAs, all the way down to the third grade level. And when you're getting down to third, fourth, and fifth graders, and you're projecting whether or not they are on track for college readiness 10 years later, the statistical reliability is really not very good. The margin of error is very, very wide. We don't have a problem with these scores at the high school level. That makes sense to us. But we think that the legislature really should reconsider requiring college readiness projections for students at that grade level. We just don't think the statistics are there to justify that work. And then the last thing I want to talk about is the requirement for above grade and below grade level questions on the MCA tests. And there the issue is that this is not compatible with how federal requirements have been in place up to now. The federal requirements have been that the state could not use those scores in terms of its use of the scores for accountability. And so what that has meant is that because it's required in state law, NDE added additional questions, added above and below grade questions to the tests, but then because of federal law, didn't use those questions to calculate proficiency and growth scores. So our recommendation here actually is a little bit of a wait-and-see approach, partly because of the changes in federal law and the change in the administration. It is not quite clear whether or not this federal requirement will continue to be the case moving forward. And so we think that we suggest that NDE report back to the legislature on what it learns from additional federal guidance. But if the scores continue to not be useful for making up the proficiency and the growth scores, the legislature should probably consider taking that requirement out of the law. We also have a broader concern about the law in that there are a lot of different purposes listed in law for how the tests are to be used. They're required to measure proficiency and growth. They're required to provide some placement information with regard to Minnesota state institutions. They're required to be used in teacher and principal evaluations. They're required to provide diagnostic information for teachers for use of their students. you put all these things together, and then you ask one test to do all of those things, and your end result may be that the test ends up serving some of those purposes a lot better than others. It's a little bit, we suggest, like if the legislature were to tell the department to buy a car and to say the car has to get really good gas mileage and it has to be able to tow a boat and it has to be easy to parallel park and it has to carry lots of passengers and it has to cost less than $25,000, and your department, go ahead and figure that out. Well, the end result is that if you tell the department all those things are important, then the department ends up deciding what it thinks is important rather than going with what the legislature thinks is most important, because the legislature hasn't made any prioritization among all those things. So we have recommendations for the legislature with regard to the law. We think that the legislature should reconsider some of these very specific prescriptive requirements in the law that we don't think work very well. And broadly, we suggest that the legislature do a better job providing clearer priorities to the Department of Education about what it thinks is most important. If the legislature thinks that meeting the federal requirements is the most important thing and do that first and then provide these other uses later, then say that. If it's most important to reduce logistical challenges for districts, then say that. If it's most important to evaluate teachers, say that. And then the tests can be constructed to do those things as best as the department can. But if you tell the department to do everything, then you might not end up getting exactly what the legislature really wanted. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm done with my presentation. I'd be more than happy to take questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kirshner. Representative Bennett has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Kirshner, for this. What a great report here and lots of work, so I thank you all for that. I have a question, and this may be outside the realm of what you were tasked to do, so you might as well let me know if this is something you just don't have information on, but first, I'll say that this echoes exactly what I experienced as an elementary school teacher. My question is, I know from experience that not only is there a lot of time just on the test taking, but there's a lot of test prep time that goes on. There's a practice test, which also takes that computer lab time, but it takes instruction time and other ramping up things that happen in the classrooms. Were you able to get a handle on any of that type of thing that took away from instruction and other things that actually took away from instruction? We can infer here, but
Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Bennett. We did ask about that, and we, when we visited with charter schools and school districts and in our surveys, and what we found is it varies quite a lot. There were some teachers who told us, you know, we have, you know, 4 or 5 hours of you know, practicing on using the computer and those sorts of things, and that's really it. And we had some teachers tell us, this affects my entire year, that I change the way I teach because of the way that the tests are constructed. So it really varied from one location to the next. So we don't have any overall conclusions about that because it really varied based upon individual teacher preferences. It varied based upon the preferences of local school administrators and sometimes of school boards. So we didn't have a single answer to that question, but we did ask it.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One more question, if I could. Thank you. And also, I'm wondering, in your study, it showed that a lot of people are pulled from their other positions, special ed teachers, I know Title I staff and things, I remember that in our building, to help with the test. Is there a measurement in here of how much time was taken away actually from the instruction of those teachers? We know they're pulled from that, but do we know how much time was missed for students there?
Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We didn't come up with a way of measuring that, and part of the difficulty there was we felt we were doing our work in terms of contacting schools the following fall asking folks, well, how much time did you spend back in February and March? It felt to us that we were not going to get information that we were going to feel comfortable aggregating and saying, well, we have the answer. It was rather difficult. I think that our recommendation to the department to think about how to measure this type of information, it may be possible when you start at the beginning of the window to get a better sense of that, if there's a specific way, again, that's not too burdensome for school districts and charter schools to try and get at some of those issues. But we felt that trying to measure that retrospectively was not going to provide the type of accurate information we normally want to provide to the legislature.
Thank you. Members, on page 32 is a chart that shows the most common locally adopted assessments reported by the survey participants and the test to which Representative Bennett referred, the OPA, which is no longer given, discontinued after this school year. 232 districts were using that. And then, of course, you can see the map, which is very popular for measuring growth. I know that those are tests I have taken just so I could experience those in my districts. And then it goes on to list the ASVAB, the AccuPlacer, the PSAT, the Ames Web, the STAR 360 I know is quite popular, and the FAST is also quite popular, but you'll notice those are fewer in number. But, yes, there are other locally adopted assessments that our districts are using.
If I could, Madam Chair?
Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to note that we used the numbers in this chart from the survey because we want them to be comparable to one another. But because the OPA is administered by the Department of Education, we actually have that exact number, and that's down in the footnote down below. We know that 323 students used the OPA
school districts.
I'm sorry, school districts and charter schools. Thank you. Used the OPA in 2016. So I just thought I would go ahead and note that. But we gave the numbers here from the survey so that they would be comparable to one another.
Very good. That was very good of you to keep that data so that it was apples to apples. I have a question for you, Mr. Kirshner. When you were finding out the amount of time spent testing, were you able to interview to find out, this is a window of testing, so how much time is spent out of the classroom for a particular, let's say, grade or at the high school level for maybe a course? I'm not sure how they all organize, but I know I used to have to release so that testing could be done to my English students. But did you collect any of that data to find out? Because it sounds like, you know, all we're doing during that window of time is testing, when I know that it's in and out, because not everyone can be in a test situation every day or every hour. So did you collect any of that data or have any of those interviews?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that's an excellent point. And it's one of the reasons that I emphasize the difference between the individual level in terms of how much time students spend and the school level. That at the individual level, students are not spending lots of time taking tests. As I said, for students that are taking only two MCAs, which is most students, we're talking a little over 3 hours at the median for an individual student. So that would indicate how much roughly, I mean, obviously there's going to be kind of before and after stuff going on, but that gives you a rough idea of how much time those students are spending away from the classroom. However, one of the things, we weren't able to assess what they would have been doing had there been no testing. but we did certainly hear a number of anecdotes about the fact that sometimes they were not able to receive the same educational instruction that they would have received had testing not been going on. As I mentioned, this was particularly of a concern related to English language instruction and related to special education. I remember in one district that we went to where we were told that some English language learners don't receive English instruction for up to a month because the teachers are tied up dealing with the testing. And now that isn't what we heard everywhere, but we felt that was concerning, and we also felt the fact that that's not being measured and not being considered by NDE or the legislature when it's making policy decisions was concerning and something we wanted to bring to your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Kirshner. Representative Kunish-Kadim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. And just to let you know, I'm a library media specialist. I was in elementary schools for 20 years, and now I'm at the middle school. And I was also a testing coordinator for over 10 years, which was probably my least favorite thing to ever do. It put a lot of stress on teachers and inevitably, you know, don't shoot the messenger kind of thing. Trying to schedule it was a logistical nightmare because there was so much going on. And I think one of the things that we haven't addressed is the anxiety and the stress for the staff as well as the students. I
personally witnessed so many students melting down because there is so much pressure put on this, on these tests. And it isn't just the MCA test. These students are testing year-round high-stake tests. We have kindergartners who within days of arriving in kindergarten are expected to start taking tests on the computer. So there's math testing, there's all of these other tests that the students are taking. So that obviously is not reflected in this report, but by the time students take the MCA, they are so in that test fatigue because they're taking that MAP test. A lot of districts, the MAP test just before the MCAs, it's spring, it's warm, it's muggy, it's putrid in that computer lab, and I know that they're important, but I think that we need to look at some other way of doing this. But I do have a couple of questions and comments. When you're talking about the testing vendor, has there been improved sort of cybersecurity? Because was it 2 or 3 years that a middle school student was able to take the site down? And so I'm wondering if that was anything that you looked at during the report.
Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. Our overall sense was that MDE was doing a pretty good job at getting the vendor to fix things that went wrong. Not that things didn't go wrong, but that generally the vendor's doing, when things did go wrong, they fixed things. I'm going to defer to the department on the specifics in terms of what they've done in terms of cybersecurity. I think they can probably answer those questions a little better than I can. But I can say that our kind of broad overview look was that we felt that the department was generally doing pretty good as far as holding the vendor's feet to the fire.
And we will hear from the department later.
Okay.
Representative.
And then I guess I would like to go back to that time spent testing. And you talked a little bit about prepping, and having lived it for 10 years, I can tell you it is year-round prepping. And when you are approaching those deadlines, and this is such a high risk for administrators as well as teachers because this is how Minnesota has chosen to rate those schools, pretty much everything stops, and you are teaching to these tests. And that's the reality of it. I've been in a school where it was said all you're going to do is prep for reading and math, no more social studies, no more this, no more that. Get these kids ready to show that progress. And it's really stressful on the teachers, and it is really stressful on the students. But one of my questions, too, is two questions. Can you tell us how many questions by grade level the students have to answer, and then how many of those above and below questions that don't even count were included in that? And then one of the things that I observed was the length of questions in, like, reading passages and science passages, even in math. Can you speak to that a little bit as far as how age-appropriate those are? Did you find anything on that subject?
Mr. Kirshner, before I have you answer, Representative Kunesh-Podein, Jennifer Dugan is in the audience from the department, and I know she can address those questions. But if Mr. Kirshner has an answer, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually don't have a particularly good answer. We did not. We had to kind of pick and choose what we worked on, and we did not really look at the content of the tests for the most part. We left that, I guess, for another day, and focused a bit more on some of these other issues, the relationship with the vendor, the local impacts, and on the way in which the test scores are being used at the local level. But we didn't really look at the content. I will note that the types of things that you're talking about, experiences you are referring to, are certainly experiences that we heard in a number of the places that we visited as well. At the same time, as I said in my answer to Representative Bennett, we saw in other districts that there didn't seem to be that same kind of year-round stress associated with testing. So it's there was variation there in that, but that we absolutely heard some of the same types of anecdotes that you're relating today.
I'll just wait for the department to ask more questions then. Thank you.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when I was following the presentation, I'm a little bit concerned with how testing impact our English language learners. And so you said that right now they're tested from grades K to 12. Is it, are they being tested every year, or how is that being administered?
Mr. Kushner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Lee. They are, every student who is identified as an English learner is tested, is given all four of those tests, reading, writing, speaking, and listening, in all grades, K through 12. So if they continue to be English learners, they are tested annually. However, as students become better and better with their English, they eventually stop being identified as English learners, and then no longer have to take the tests. But for those students who struggle to get their English up to proficiency, they may go ahead and take those tests for many years. It, of course, varies from one student to the next whether or not they get up to speed very quickly on English proficiency. One of the things that is somewhat interesting, as a side note, about the English proficiency tests is that for that reason, the growth scores for English proficiency have to be interpreted very differently than the growth scores for the NCA, because students that grow very much in English proficiency stop taking the test and disappear from the data. And so it ends up being a very different way of interpreting the information.
And Representative Lee, that'll be a good question to ask Ms. Dugan or even Mr. McHenry when they come down from the department.
Okay.
Because that's a good question. Do you have another?
Yes.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So one of the slides you show was that some of our principals or teachers are not, they feel like they're not prepared to interpret the EL results. Do you have any specific recommendations for the legislature, or is this something that falls under the broad recommendation that we should set our priorities and think about what we want as legislature?
Mr. Kushner, quite a challenging question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question.
I did not call you Representative Kushner.
thank you, Representative Lee, for the question. I think broadly what I would say is we felt in doing this study that there was not very much attention being paid to access scores, and yet it was taking up a lot of time, and it was an important part of the information that we gain about students. And it's very significant in some districts. St. Paul, Richfield, they give more access tests each year than they give MCAs because it's in every grade. So that's a lot of tests being given. And even in schools that don't have quite as many English language learners as those districts, there are still a lot of those tests being given. So there's a lot of effort being put into those. And the fact that such a small number of teachers and principals felt that they were getting useful information or even saw the scores, we thought was concerning. I think I don't have the statistic right in front of me, but I think something like half of the teachers we surveyed said that they didn't see the access scores or couldn't remember whether they'd seen them. And so we thought that was, for something that we spend a lot of time working on, was something to highlight, to work on. And maybe that's something that NDE, in terms of doing more outreach on test scores, can emphasize more is what kind of value there is in the access scores and how they can be used by regular classroom teachers as well as ELL specialists.
Good questions to ask the department representatively when they come to the table. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to follow up more on that line of understanding. So the significant number of people are not, they say they cannot interpret the scores, or they're not, you know, they don't think they're useful to them in the way that they are supposed to be useful. So is it one, how are they supposed to be used, basically? I mean, is it supposed to track a child and how, you know, if they are learning and on pace, or is it supposed to be tracking a teacher or a school district or a curriculum? So, you know, I guess that could be different answers by which kind of tests are being used, but, you know, starting with the access scores, how are they supposed to be used?
Mr. Kushner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to start with the MCAs because that's a somewhat easier answer because that's in law, all of those. in law, all of those things are supposed to be the ways in which the MSAs are going to be used. Access is a little different, in part because it's produced by a consortium, and so there's somewhat less easy for, say, the legislature to require MDE to make the test in a particular way. For example, the WIDA, which is the name of the consortium that produces the access test, they say very specifically that they do not think those tests are should be used to evaluate teachers. That's one of the things that they put in their technical documentation. This test is not appropriate to be used that way. So there are some specifics in the WIDA documentation for how the test is supposed to be used. It's generally oriented toward ensuring, and Jennifer's certainly a specialist on this, but is generally oriented toward determining what a student's capabilities are, how functionally able they are to use English in the classroom, and across several different domains, because you need to use English in the classroom in a lot of different ways. And so reading, speaking, writing, listening, those are all different ways in which you might use English, and the test distinguishes among those. And you may find that a student actually, for example, reads and listens, understands English very well, even though they have more difficulty speaking and writing it. And so those types of information one might think would be helpful, for example, to regular classroom teachers that have those students in their classes. I don't know if that answered your question.
Follow up?
Another question, if I may. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm looking at the list of on page 32 of all the different local tests that are being used, and then, you know, understanding all these, you know, that's part of your presentation is school districts choosing to also give local tests. And which adds time on test. Mm-hmm. So when we say 3.1, that's the number of hours the students are. So that's on these tests that come from the legislature.
And that's actually specifically on the MCA. I'm sorry, on the MCAs. Yeah.
Okay. And so then, so we still don't know how much time students are spending on tests, because then, you know, across the state it may vary with all these other local tests. And then is there, you know, a common pattern to why school districts choose to, in addition, administer these local tests in addition to the federal and state required tests?
Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, it does vary quite a lot from one district to the next, and I think it's a combination of answers, I would say. One thing that certainly that we heard is that school administrators want in-the-moment sorts of information. We don't want information that comes at the end of the year. We want to know right now in November where we're at. We want to know right now in February where we're at. And so that they use these short, fairly quickly administered and quickly scored tests to provide that kind of point of information so that they can get a better sense of where they are in the course of the school year. So that's one example we heard. There are other schools that are particularly interested in comparing their students to others nationwide in a kind of a norm reference sort of a way, and there are some schools for whom that's an important reason they give the test. We want to be able to compare our students not just within Minnesota at the end of the year, but nationwide using a MAP test or some other nationally administered test. So that's something of interest as well. I think there are many different reasons is perhaps the short answer. Resources also matter as well. For school districts that have few computer resources, they may be less inclined to do lots of testing because of the amount of disruption it causes. When you have school districts that are approaching one-to-one ratios between students and devices, it may be easier for them to administer some of these additional tests without as much disruption to the school day. So I think there's a lot of different things in there.
Members, you will notice on page 15 the selected changes to state assessment law that have occurred since 2007. And in the conference committee report of 2015, there was an agreement between us and the DFL Senate to limit student time spent taking locally adopted tests to a maximum of 10 or 11 hours per school year. But we don't know to what extent that has been followed. So that's an interesting challenge for us, perhaps, to ask the department. I see Mr. McHenry up there smiling. I don't know if they have followed up on that, but that was a recommendation from Senator Wicker, and we finally did agree to it on the conference committee. Although an amendment did come to me for the policy bill to repeal that, I've not done that yet, but that may be coming in the future. Other questions from members? Representative Jessup.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you both for being here. I'm not an educator, but I look at this and I say, okay, we have tests, and tests are there for various purposes, and you list out right in the beginning that first of all, we need to be compliant with our federal regulations, and then we have our own desires here in the state. And so I get that, and I understand, you know, as parents and as people in the community, we want to understand, okay, where does our school rank relative to others? But the overall objective is for the tests to really benefit the teachers in educating our children. And I think you hit it on the head. Understanding these test scores, it's a real concern to me as I look at the principals and the teachers that are actually feeling like they can take these test scores and actually interpret them and use them to the education of students. That, to me, that's a fundamental concern, I guess, that I have. And I'm just wondering, I throw it out there, you know, your conversations with teachers and with principals and so forth, did you get any comments coming back on this? Just what could help them?
Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there are probably a lot of different answers to that question. I will note that with regard to the survey question here, I should point out perhaps that the way in which we asked this question perhaps primed teachers and principals a little bit, because we didn't – this is just the one question I put up on the slide, but we actually asked about each specific score first. We asked about the scale scores. We asked about the growth scores. We asked about the Z scores. There's a bunch of different things that are part of the test, and we asked about all of those. And then we said, overall, how comfortable do you feel? And it may have been the case that when I actually asked to think about each particular one of the scores, we might have gotten somewhat lower answers than if we just said, hey, how do you feel about MCA scores, and didn't ask them those particulars. But we thought it was important to ask about those particulars because the state spends a fair amount of time putting that data together and producing it out there, and we wanted to get a sense of which types of data were more important. And certainly some were more important than others. Teachers and principals are more comfortable dealing with the proficiency scores, our students meeting standards, than they are, for example, with the what are called the Z scores, which is the way in which NVE puts the growth scores out there. So to some extent, it varies with regard to what type of score that we're talking about, and that's an important thing to note. The other thing I will note is that there's a significant amount of investment of time involved in learning this information and understanding it. You can read the three or four page handouts and you can get some information, but you need to read more information to do more types of interpretation. We visited, for example, with one charter school where we interviewed them and we asked them how they were using the scores. The way they told us they were using the scores, we kind of thought to ourselves, that's not quite right. And sure enough, if you make it to page 122 of the technical manual, which we did, but probably not every teacher has done, no, you're not supposed to use the scores in that way. But that's a significant investment of time for a teacher to make it to page 122 of the technical manual. I suspect most teachers don't quite make it there. I want to acknowledge, actually, the teachers that took the time to respond to our survey. We ended up giving it right around the start of the school year when teachers are very busy. I have to say we were astonished because this was a computer-administered survey, so we were able to look at this. We were astonished at the number of teachers who responded to our survey between midnight and 5 in the morning. It was more than one or two. So we're really grateful for those teachers for caring enough about this topic to provide us with the information that we were able to use in our report.
Okay. Representative Bly, last question. I think we have to move on. Representative Jessup, I can come back to you. Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. So I'm sorry I came in late, so I didn't hear all of your presentation, but this is a very complex issue that you're delving into, and I appreciate your work. It looks like you did a thorough job. This is a subject that, if you look at the history of education, you realize it's a debate that's been going on for many, many years and disagreement about whether we should be testing more or, you know, letting kind of discovery with teachers and students go forward in that kind of way. And one thing that occurs to me, and ultimately this is a result of political decisions, not necessarily pedagogical decisions, and we need somehow we need to have a discussion and sort all that out. I think we've learned things from the testing that has come forward, and some of that is, you know, that I've been a teacher, so I know this, but one positive thing of some of the testing that I've seen is that teachers have gotten together and talked about how can we develop things to improve overall. But I wonder sometimes if we're trying to get certain kinds of tests to do too much or to give us too much information. And I think that's some of what your research shows, that we need to step back from that and analyze whether or not we're really doing that. And I guess I happen to be someone who's worked under the what was called the profile of learning, which was a completely different kind of philosophy, different look at things. And it was going in a direction where you weren't necessarily trying to standardize things. And I'm wondering if you got much feedback from people who felt that the standardization or that everyone needs to be at the same level or everyone needs to be at the same proficiency level or whatever, if you got much feedback from teachers saying that's in some way inhibiting or it's strengthening what we do, did they comment on that kind of pedagogical question?
Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question. I think I would say we heard that most often from special education teachers who often expressed frustration that students were being tested at grade level when it was clear that those students are not currently performing at grade level and they felt like the tests weren't providing them a whole lot of information that they didn't already have. They spend all day with these students. They know that they're not performing at grade level. So that frustration, I think, was there among some special education professionals. I will say there were other special education professionals we talked to who felt that there was considerable value in testing students at grade level. So there was not one answer there. But in terms of the particular question you asked, I think that was most commonly what we heard from special educators with regard to that mismatch to some extent. There were other folks who expressed interest in who said, for example, they really liked their locally administered test, their locally adopted test, rather, because they would allow students to move up and down within a grade levels. You know, that the students do very well would get questions two or three grade levels above. Students that were doing poorly would get questions two or three grade levels below, and that provided them, they felt, with better information. So that also is something that we heard in some locations. But it again, I think the answer is it varies. And when we talk about, for example, teachers and principals who say that they didn't understand test scores, and we felt that was concerning that the numbers were as high as they were, there were also plenty who do feel like they understand test scores. And we had very detailed conversations with some educators who really have looked into the data and understand it very well. So it's not the case to say that nobody understands them, and it's also not the case to say that everybody understands them. It's somewhere in between. I hope that answered your question to some extent.
It does.
Representative Bly.
Thank you. I'll try to be brief. One of the things I wonder, understanding what you're saying is that there's diversity in the delivery system of our education system, and is there a way that we might learn from that information about how to deal with that? And I guess I'm not saying that relying on. I mean, maybe we need to figure out how to look at things that both kind of pedagogical ways of thinking allow us to proceed, and if we can come up with a way to talk to each other about how to improve the overall system without being just focused on the tests and what they can or cannot give us in information.
Thank you, Representative Bly. Representative Jessup, did you want to follow up with a question?
I did.
This will be the last one.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
I wanted to point out initially when you began the presentation, you talked about one of the concerns is really that the tests being taken are being taken by computer, and there's limited resources for schools out there. And as you came to your recommendations, you had here that some laws are too prescriptive. You've got a couple of bullets, you know, the career and college readiness scores for lower grade levels, is that needed? Above grade and below grade questions, are those needed? And I guess the way I like to frame it is, if the test were reduced in terms of the overall length, which if I'm thinking of a third grader or fifth grader, an hour and a half on average, knowing that some students are much above that, that's a pretty long testing time. At least I'm thinking of my children and you know, attention span and so forth. I'm thinking about if the testing was reduced, the student had to spend less time on the test. That might help in terms of the limitation we have on computer resources. And I guess this is a more of a theoretical, but I'm going to ask you about that question. My theoretical to those, especially in the education world, is would it be preferable to do less testing for the children and to have more opportunity for the teachers to have to evaluate the results? But to you, the first question.
Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question. And actually, to both Representative Bly's last point and to yours, I think one of the things that is kind of overriding here is the federal requirements, that it is a requirement of federal law that the state test students on the depth and breadth of the state standards. And so in order to get that amount of coverage, the tests have to be a certain length, and I don't know exactly what that certain length is, Jennifer Dugan can come down here and perhaps answer that question better. I'm sure she's thanking me back there for pitching it to her. But but I do think it's certainly one of the trade-offs to consider. When you ask fewer questions, of course, you get somewhat less information. And that is one of the major trade-offs of any kind of test design. Just like, for your driving test, if your driving test took 4 hours, they'd know a lot more about how well you drove. But who wants to take a four-hour driving test? To some extent, I suspect it's the same way with any other type of testing, that there's a balance to strike. And when you get more information, then you have more information, and you can do more with it. But then there are complications with logistical complications with gathering that much information. So, yes, shorter tests would be logistically easier. They might produce less information.
Well, thank you very much to both of you, Mr. Kirshner and Ms. Randall, and to staff from the OLA. We really appreciate your taking the time to deliver this report and for us to be able to interact with you on questions. So we will work on this. I know that. It will not be overnight. But it'll take some time, and we will try to figure out, based on your recommendations, what might be best for our students and our teachers and our school districts. So with that, thank you very much. And I'll call up Ms. Dugan and Mr. McHenry. Also, we have a student in the audience today. Her name is Molly. Molly, would you come forward to the testifying table before the experts join us? And you came taking a day off spring break today to hear this report, and so I'd like the committee to hear what you have to say about standardized testing. So I think you know what to do. You say your name for the record, maybe what grade you're in, what school you attend, and then proceed to give your information.
Okay, so I'm Molly Barker. I'm in eighth grade, and I go to Hastings Middle School. I think that we spend way too much time taking tests, and my teachers, they told me that we would spend 3 days taking our language arts test, and we've spent a lot of time preparing for it, and I think it takes away from, our reading time and other things that we could be learning. So.
Well, thank you very much for coming to listen to us today. Thank you. Mr. McHenry and Ms. Dugan, please. Thank you, Molly. Mm-hmm. Enjoy your spring break. Welcome, Mr. McHenry and Ms. Dugan. You know the routine. Say your names for the record and begin. And I'm sure we're going to have questions for you, but I know you have some remarks to make, so please proceed.
Sure thing. Members, Madam Chair, Kevin McHenry, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Education. just want to say first off, that's a tough act to follow, so I appreciate you bringing Molly up here. But just on this report, we appreciate you all taking the time to dig into this. We understand that testing is a very important issue, and making sure that we get it right is something that we value. We want to thank the Office of the Legislative Auditor for taking the time to do this thorough analysis. We think the thought, the recommendations, and the details they put forth, we felt it was very thorough. We felt it was a very fair report. This is also something, as an agency and as a division of statewide testing and assessment, that we've taken very seriously. We were looking forward to this report being finalized to see what the recommendations were. But I can tell you that Ms. Dugan and I have sat down with our assessment division, and they've taken this very seriously in terms of where are areas that we can improve, where are areas that are we doing well. And I think in this report, it's really shown that there are some areas that we're performing very well. In the report, the contract management is highlighted. But also in the report, it does show some areas where we can collaborate with you all, the legislature, and areas where we can collaborate with districts so we can perform better as well. First and foremost, the questions that you all have asked so far, we look forward to getting into those, whether it's specific to the recommendations here or if we get into the technical questions of the test. One thing that's really been highlighted by your questions and by the report is just how expansive and how maybe difficult solving, let's say, the testing issue with some just really easy requirement is something that's not going to be easy to do. These tests, how they've been built, have been built to really do very many things. So when we're building our test, we're building those to our state academic standards. And there's value in terms of making sure that we have questions to our locally adopted standards and that our tests are built to those. This report shows when we are building those tests, we're able to make some adjustments much more quickly when we have a test built to our specific state standards. Whereas if we have a test that's, let's say, maybe an off-the-shelf product, that's something that we don't have as much flexibility with. So there's pros in terms of having a test built to our state standards, and there's cons, just as there's pros and cons to having an off-the-shelf product as well. Getting into the list of recommendations, if you'd like, I can walk through the recommendations on the back page, and then we can open it up for questions for Ms. Dugan and I. But overall, we think these are very fair and look forward to working with you all in order to help implement the recommendations from the OLA report. On the list of recommendations at the back, it does indicate that the Minnesota Department of Education should ensure that public school districts and charter schools administer the required standardized tests. That's something that is required in law. We also have, through our federal standards, schools that do need to take these exams for accountability purposes. Through our assessment manual or testing manual is where we put all of our regulations or how to administer tests that kind of outlines what districts and schools can do to implement our exams. I think one of the things that Ms. Dugan and I were talking about is how we measure all schools actually making sure they take those exams. I think that's something that we can document and clarify. And at the same time, you know, as you're talking, moving forward and working on these questions, that's something that we could talk about is what would be the penalty or the accountability mechanism if the school chose to just not actually administer the exams. The second recommendation is just in terms of improving measurement of school district and charter school satisfaction with test vendor services, as well as systematically evaluating the impacts of testing on local districts and charter schools. We feel that this is very important. We work really closely with our vendors to really make sure that if there are questions or there are concerns coming from charters or from districts, we want to make sure that we're solving problems that are coming up. We'd like to solve those in advance. We try to prep for those questions or concerns or implementation issues. We try to prep for that before the testing window opens. And that's something that we will continue to do in terms of reaching out, in terms of the satisfaction levels. That's something we're very interested in doing. We want to make sure that if we're asking questions and surveying districts and asking them to take time out of their schedules to follow up with us, that if they're providing us with information, we want to make sure that there's something that we can actually do to respond. Sometimes in legislation, or sometimes with legislation, we may not have the ability to respond without working with you all first. So that's something that we want to continue to weigh. Where am I at here? There was recommendations around removing the MCA growth formula in law and state and putting forth broad guidance. I think, Madam Chair, this is what you've referred to in terms of areas where we would have to dive in more. This is a legislative change that we'd be more than happy to work on you with that. The law around repealing the college and career readiness benchmarks in the 3-8 grades, that's obviously something that we continue to work on. Recently passed, we do have college and career readiness indicators for our MCAs in high school. And last session it was passed where if a student performed at a certain level on the reading and math MCAs, that the student would not be required to take remedial courses if they intended a Minnesota State institution. So we think there's value in having those college and career readiness indicators, at least at a high school level. In terms of moving that down to the 3-8 grade level, we understand what the auditor was saying in terms of measuring college and career readiness that early. We do know that the benchmarks that we did come up with are very close to our proficiency benchmarks on our MCAs, and so that's something that we can explore with you all as well. It also indicates that the legislature should require the department to report on usefulness of above and off grade testing questions. We feel this is a really valid recommendation. We actually, in our policy bill, have already recommended to remove the off-grade test questions. That does increase the length of the test. The auditor did highlight that does not only lengthen the length of the test, but also it's not used for accountability purposes. Again, this was trying to have one test do very many things, and so that's one of the recommendations that we're bringing forward. I think the final one, or the second to last one, is continue to increase outreach and support to school districts and charters regarding the interpretation and use of standardized test scores. To us, I think this is where, as a department and as a division of statewide testing and assessment, is where we're really focusing the most. The numbers that were presented by the legislative auditor in terms of principals and teachers understanding how to use the test scores is something that we take very seriously, and it's something that Ms. Dugan and I saw immediately in the report, and working with our Division of Statewide Testing, that's something that they all saw as well. We have a lot of educators that work in the Department of Education that have worked in the classroom as well, and this is something that they see from colleagues of an area where we can really stand to improve and reach out to districts. But what we want to do is make sure that we're providing the information that's needed and necessary. Right now we do have an individual who's on our analytics department in statewide testing that does provide forums, does provide trainings, webinars across the state, but it is one individual that is trying to reach all teachers across the street or all principals. And I think what we need to do as a department or as a division is really kind of strategize what's the best way to make sure that we're reaching all the teachers. We do have teachers that really work with us on building our tests. So we do have individuals who are already working with us. So it's maybe more low-hanging fruit in terms of reaching those teachers. But the teachers that we're not reaching, I think that's something that we're interested in working with teachers across the state, with their organizations, with the principals' organizations as well, to really work with them in terms of how we can connect best. We've also reached out already with the to TIES and the TIES coordinators who are providing technology support to districts. And after the meeting last week with them, they've already offered to help work with us to try to make that connection as well. And then the final recommendation was around avoiding prescribed language in legislation or in statute. Again, I think that's something that the chair and you all have laid out as something that we need to work on together of what's appropriate. We want to make sure that we're delivering an assessment system that is meeting your expectations, that's meeting the expectations of teachers and students across the state, and look forward to continuing that work with you. So with that, I'll hold for questions or questions for Ms. Dugan as well.
So, Mr. McHenry, when you're out and about or the commissioner is talking to the public, I noticed that public opinion polls are, for the most part, supportive of testing, especially among our minority communities. So what do you hear parents talking about when, you know, we have these conversations about standardized testing, the time it takes, the time it might take away from classroom instruction?
Madam Chair, members, that's a great question. We really hear a broad range of the uses of assessments. One of the things that that I've found is that really kind of laying out what our tests are used for and how they're built to our state standards sometimes is not common knowledge throughout the state, and sometimes that's a conversation that we like to have with individuals when they're discussing testing. Now, I think for the most part, everybody would like to have an assessment that's very short, that meets our standards, that can show growth, provide immediate results to districts. But when we start adding on other layers, I think that is really where some angst comes from in terms of, you know, using it for teacher evaluation, using it for accountability, and really having high stakes associated with that. We hear that those arguments start coming out in our conversations. And then we also do hear where teachers or individuals prefer using other assessments. And I think the OLA, the auditor already laid out the issues with that, is that there are benefits to using, let's say, an off-the-shelf product, but when they're not necessarily utilized for the same purpose, for measuring our state academic standards and for accountability, that sometimes that conversation could change. And so I think it's a complex conversation to have when you're talking accountability and state standards versus assessments for that kind of quick utilization that can be used inside the classroom.
So, Mr. McHenry, any response to the legislation that requires no more than 10 to 11 hours testing with other assessments? Any feedback from districts? Are they following that, or are they blowing it off? Or I know they did bring an amendment to me to repeal that, which I have no problem with, but, you know, we need to have more information on that.
And sure thing, Madam Chair, members, and that's a good question. I think the issue with that really kind of gets at making sure that we're having our educators actually teaching in classrooms, and we really support the idea of making sure that our teachers and principals were teaching to our academic standards and implementing those state standards. We feel if you're implementing those standards, you'll do well on tests, whether they're standardized or other locally adopted exams. We do feel that at the that decision should be made at a local level of what's the appropriateness of what exam that school districts choose to use. In terms of how districts are utilizing that, we have communicated once the law was passed that there was this requirement in statute that directed districts to not test over these specific hours. I haven't heard districts saying that we're following it or not following it. I have heard that in discussions, I have heard that that there's no, let's say, penalty for not abiding by that 2%. But I haven't heard anything specifically where districts said that they're not abiding by that 2% rule.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry. Are these questions for Mr. McHenry, Representative Ward? Okay. Representative Erdahl?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. McHenry, as we emphasize testing more in Minnesota, do you ever compare or examine countries in the world that are recognized as having superior education systems and have cut back or eliminated standardized testing?
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, yeah, we do look at different models across the world of what across the states as well. We have engaged in the past with Finland on their system in terms of how they implement standardized tests and how they don't implement standardized tests and the results they've received. And that's something that we definitely have looked at. But at the same time, we do have to balance what is required in statute and federal law as well. And so I think if there was going to be a broad change to maybe go in the direction that you're talking about, that's something that we have to work on with you all as well.
Well, Mr. McHenry, in some of those countries, don't they have a nationalized curriculum, which we do not? We have standards, but districts choose their own curriculum. So the approaches and the materials that teachers use are going to vary from district to district. It's just that the benchmark will be that item for which a test item will be pointed, and then we want our students to succeed. So thank you for following that. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to just get where the rubber meets the road. So I haven't heard anybody talk about connecting a student taking the test, getting results in a timely manner, understanding interventions to help that student, and then linked to curriculum. So in honor of Molly's presence here, let's just say the student is Molly. Takes an MCA test in the spring. Results don't come until the fall, when that student Molly has a different teacher, is in a different grade. There's no link to the curriculum or an intervention for Molly who doesn't pass the reading. And then furthermore, Molly wants to be in AP Language Arts, but her MCA test says that she's not meeting standards, and she's going to be put in remedial reading. But Molly's pretty precocious, so she goes to the teacher and says, but I like language arts, and I want to be in that class. And so she gets permission, and she ends up getting an A. Where are we at? Where does the rubber meet the road?
Mr. McHenry.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm going to let Ms. Dugan answer kind of the technical piece in terms of connecting all of those. One thing I do want to just highlight is in terms of the response time and how quickly their test results get out. When a student takes an exam, the districts do get the preliminary information within usually an hour. And I'm going to actually bring in another question that got brought up too, so I don't want to hopefully I don't complicate this too much. But another question that was asked earlier was around what in terms of we're doing to prevent these kind of the DDoS attacks and the disruptions we had in the past. And I think these are linked where we worked with our vendor when we had these testing disruptions to help prevent these hacking attacks that were happening. And through that, we have enhanced our security, or I should say our vendor has enhanced the security to really protect the data and the information and protect against hacking. I think that's an ongoing thing that we work on with our vendor to make sure that we're continuing to increase the security around our exams and help to prevent against instances like that. But that is an ongoing battle. Part of that was moving to a different platform, and part of that moving to the different platform is how those exams scores and results get back to the teachers in the classroom. Part of that does lie on the district assessment coordinators and who they define as responsible individuals throughout the district to make sure that they are actually rostering the student with the proper teacher so the student's results go to the right teacher. And so that's one of the things we continue to work with our vendor on to try to find a ways to simplify that. But in terms of the data getting back, we're getting that back within an hour. There's another step within the districts and schools to get that back to the teacher. I just wanted to make sure I got that on the table because we do hear that quite a bit. But then to get to the rest of your question, I think Ms. Dugan could probably get to the kind of the technical aspect in terms of how that all works.
Welcome, Ms. Dugan. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you. Jennifer Dugan, Director for the Division of Statewide Testing at the Minnesota Department of Education. And first and foremost, I would say that we do publish a procedures manual, as Mr. McHenry referenced earlier, and in that we very clearly state that it is not appropriate to use the MCA scores in isolation to determine something such as course enrollment in AP or grade promotion or placement in even a remedial course, for example. And so the MCA score should absolutely be taken in context with other pieces of information, with other data points. That's very clearly stated. Additionally, when we release the scores, those scores are, again, are available within an hour, and the district does have available to them the scale score and the student's subscore information, as well as currently we are providing a learning locator. So, again, providing additional information for instruction. And so it's, you know, there is definitely individual information available, and I would say from making a curricular decision from a planning perspective, that should be done looking at multiple students' results, looking more at a grade level or even at a school level, of making sure that the instruction is aligned to the state standards.
Ms. Haley. So if the data is available within an hour to the school district, is it available to a parent? Or does the school district have to release it somehow for a parent to access?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. So, again, it is variable, as Mr. McHenry mentioned. And it's a local decision whether the district decides to share or school decides to share that information with the parent and when and how. There is a PDF that can be printed that is a report that could be shared with parents that's in a format that could be shared. Additionally, there's a way to export it that it could be put into another system that more readily could be getting to teachers. So there's a variety of ways for that information to be shared with teachers and parents.
Thank you. And I guess just in closing to Representative Jessup's point as well and to Representative Mary, Representative Kudish-Pudin, we were roommates, so it's Mary. And maybe I haven't read the complete report, so I'll have to do that. But I'd like to keep the student at the forefront again. How does this help students learn, improve, grow, and, again, connect to their curriculum and their future path? That's, I think, what educators are all about and what our objective is. And a lot of technical information, but I haven't seen the focus on the student this morning. Thank you.
Ms. Dugan, as long as you're at the table and our time is quickly passing, would you comment on the OLA report, in particular to the above and below questions that have been included since 2016 in the tests that became law in 2013, along with the World's Best Workforce, and so that's when computer adaptive testing also became law. So if you would comment on that, because as Mr. McHenry knows, and you probably do too, I did not include that policy that you would like in the policy bill that I'm authoring, because we need more discussion. It's not that I'm opposed to it, but maybe there are some nuances. So would you talk about that and anything else related to your role as the testing chief at the department?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So related to the on and off grade, again, we did implement that for the first time in 2016. What that meant for math tests for students in grades 3 through 8 is that we actually had to lengthen the test. So when the test was first revised, there's been a lot of conversation about the length of the test and what's the value and all of those pieces. And we can absolutely get you the exact numbers by grade level and by subject. When we moved from a fixed form in math, meaning all students were taking the same test in a given year, when we moved from that to an adaptive test in 2013, we were able to reduce the length of the test, because as an adaptive test is creating the test based on the student's responses, the measurement precision is increased. And so we were able to decrease the test, actually, from 2011 to 2012. And in 2016, we had to add in back in those questions in order to satisfy the legislative requirement of having on and off grade. And so we heard a lot of feedback from math teachers especially about that concern of lengthening the test. And there was conversation earlier about the federal requirements, and all indications continue to be that for proficiency calculations, we would only be allowed to use the on grade level content. So fifth graders would be assessed on fifth grade content only, and that only those questions would be included in the proficiency calculations. a part of Every Student Succeeds Act, the guidance right now is pointing us towards that in the growth calculations, depending on the growth measurement or growth model that we use in the accountability system, additional questions that would be on and off grade may be included in that growth calculation or the growth domain for the accountability system. And so that is a shift from previous requirements. How much would we need to lengthen the test to get even more information about a student's performance, taking that fifth grader again? What is their, if they were doing really well on the test, how are they really doing? Are they at a sixth grade level or are they at a seventh grade level? We would have to lengthen the test even more to get to that level of detail. And so there is a cost-benefit analysis, to be sure, in those conversations. And I think that for sure there's conversation about the interest in creating a vertical scale to be used as the growth model and the accountability system. But right now, for proficiency purposes, we would have to only use on-grade level test questions, and the teachers are telling us that they're not using that additional information. It's not overly informative. Admittedly, we did not do a lot of professional development targeted directly at teachers related to that score that we released for the first time last year. And I do think that absolutely we can do a better job helping teachers and principals interpret data, and that is going to be a continued piece of emphasis. And the reason that I say so with such confidence that we can do better and that we will do better is that if you notice on page 30 where we have put our emphasis, district assessment coordinators are telling us that they do feel prepared. They may not like, but they do feel prepared to administer mm-hmm. the assessments. They understand the procedures. They know how to administer the test. And that's where our emphasis has been, admittedly, has been over the past few years as things have continued to shift. And so that's where we've put our emphasis. And I think the report shows that where we put our emphasis, they're saying we've satisfied that. Now it's time to really make sure that as we've got a lot of trend data, and I think that that's a lot of what we need to talk about with educators, is looking at trend data and making an impact over time. We have trend data for the first time that we have not had, and really for reading ever. And so there's a lot of benefit in that, and we will absolutely do everything we can to help teachers use the data appropriately.
And, you know, Ms. Dugan and Mr. McHenry, our MCAs do fulfill that constitutional statement about uniform, because all students take the same test and are measured in the same way. So locally approved tests can be selective, self-selective, for example. But the MCAs are testing everyone, and to fulfill federal law, and I think to be responsible as state lawmakers, you know, we do have a responsibility to at least honor the fact that this test has been created. Whether it's above or below grade level is not the point right now, but at least we have a test based on our standards that is available to all students, and we can measure all students. And I know to parents, that's what they always say to me. We want all students to be a part of this. We don't want this selection. Certainly we want the data disaggregated so we can dig deeper, but we want all students on the same level when it comes to the testing. So, you know, for that I applaud your efforts, because I know how difficult this has been over the years, and we've worked a long time together, so I really appreciate that. Representative Bennett, you have a question for Ms. Dugan or Mr. McHenry.
Actually, either one. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like to throw out a thought to you as I'm listening to all this, and I find it so interesting. And at first, I want to thank you, because I can see that you're already delving deeply into this report and the recommendations and already starting to work on these things. As you work on the recommendation about helping teachers and principals, school districts, understand how to interpret these test scores, I think it would be interesting to find out from the auditors, it's listed for principals and teachers and how
sufficiently prepared they feel to interpret. Was that spotty amongst schools, or did they find like one school or district was most of those teachers and principals were ready? You maybe already know this. And then secondly, if that is the case, it would be interesting to know the correlation to if they are a QCOMP district or not, and you know how much time, extra time they've been given. I just think that would be helpful for us to know as well, so I'm just going to throw that out to you. It's not necessarily a question, but thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I think that's something they'll have to take a look at. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions, and maybe one is just to raise this as a topic, but hearing from the auditor's report, the amount of time varying so much and how much it takes to administer the tests. And so it wasn't the time on tests for students, but it was the whole school having to participate in it. And what I gathered from that, it wasn't said specifically, it's the number of computers you have available. And so do we have, across our state, you know, this big gap in technology, and that because we have a gap in technology, we have schools that are struggling because their administrators, their you know, teachers, all of these people have to spend a lot of time doing the test, where other schools from maybe the western suburbs of Minneapolis don't have to spend that amount of time. And that might be, you know, obviously a drain of resources. And is that something that we ought to be addressing?
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Representative Pryor, you know, it's a fantastic question. I think that's one of the things that districts do struggle with is what type of, you know, access to technology do they have? What type of access do they have to broadband? Because we're dealing with online assessments. Mm-hmm. And we do hear variability throughout the state. Some districts are better off than others. Some districts do have to struggle with their planning even more in terms of who has access to, let's say, the computer rooms. One thing that we have done in the last few years is really work with our vendor to have as many options available in terms of platforms to test on, rather than just having workstations. We have upgraded to provide and make sure our assessments are available on Chromebooks or Surface tablets or and iPads if they are specific sizes. But at the same time, that helps. I don't think that solves everything. In terms of how that impacts each district or school districts, I think they might be able to provide some more specific answers in terms of some districts are better off than others. But that is something that we have heard, is that there are discrepancies between districts in terms of access to technology and broadband.
Mr. McHenry, I think you and Ms. Dugan should work on games for testing. I think our students would probably do very well if they could go to their iPad or to the PC or laptop and play a game for these tests. So I think, you know, we'll think into the future for that. Representative Pryor.
And a second question, and definitely a second area of questioning, is one thing that I've heard from my school districts, and I think that we heard in the report some reference to, is there's frustration with children that are in special ed and that have different, you know, are clearly in a different category. Not all, I mean, I'm sure there's a big spectrum of where this is. And, you know, I think that that is an ongoing issue that we have to meet federal standards and to meet the state standards, but to have something that's useful to a group of children and not be add stress on them and their education. So is there, how are we working to address that too?
Ms. Dugan.
Absolutely. Thank you. So the answer is it depends, and it is, again, thinking about that spectrum. One of the, while there are pros and cons to every situation, one of the advantages that online testing does afford us is more access for all students, but also providing those accommodations for special education students in the same setting. So what we're seeing is many special education students being able to receive those accommodations in the same test session, in the same test room during an online administration, that they were not able to receive that in the paper pencil realm. Because, for example, a student might need accommodated text-to-speech. Well, all of the students have access to text-to-speech, so all students have on their headphones. So we're not singling out some students. There's masking and overlays and different representation of the content that is available for students that special education students that need that. It's not perfect. We're still continuing to look at ways that we can have assistive technology devices going on at the same time, so that they can use a screen reader that they use during instruction, during the assessment. So, again, providing them equal access in the same testing session. So we have not by any means solved all of it, but the online testing does afford us some additional opportunities that paper pencil did not allow. For students that are taking, I think the piece of that is that you may be referencing about individual student appropriateness is more the students that are taking the alternate access or the alternate assessments, and so those are ongoing conversations, and I think we've talked in this committee or in the finance committee, I'm sorry, I can't remember which one, about because of our finances, we haven't been able to redesign that alternate assessment, and so that is something that we have been wanting to do but not able to do. We hear very consistently from special education teachers and from parents and advocates that we need to be more sensitive and providing an assessment that is more not necessarily aligned, because what we're doing is aligned with the standards, but is more meaningful and can have greater impact for those students and providing more information after the fact for parents. So we're still working on it. We're not there yet.
And thanks, Representative Pryor. That's an important goal for us to have at the state level, so we are addressing the needs of all of our students. Representative Kunesh-Vadeen.
Thank you again. I do want to say thank you, and I appreciate the kind of work that you do, because this is not an easy thing to do. And the adaptive questions, I think it's a really it's really good in theory, because it does stretch some kids and allows for that student that maybe struggles to not have to continue to take harder and harder questions and then just like say, forget it, I'm done, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I've had many students that do that. So I think that's a good part. One of my main concerns is the length of questions, because when I would schedule classrooms, let's say just for the reading portion, we would, for one classroom, schedule like an hour and a half the first time, and then the students would stop and we'd do an hour and a half the next time. Mm-hmm. And again, it from my perspective as the library person, that I had to shut down my library, I had to shut down the computer lab, so that means nobody had access to that sometimes, 6 to 8 weeks out of the school year. And that was really tough. And when these students are taking these tests and we say it's an hour and a half, oftentimes it's not just an hour and a half, because all of the students have to complete the test, or at least that portion, in that amount of time. So let's say you have a student that completes it in 45 minutes. They have to sit there for 45 more minutes with their class. They're not allowed to leave in case they share any questions or secrets or anything like that. It's top secret. So if there is a way to modify that expectation, I think that would make a huge difference. But my one question is about opting out. And we know that a lot of students' families opt out, especially at the high school level. And so that's around the time that they're taking their AP tests, their ACT tests. What are the consequences to students who opt out, or to the school itself, or the district, if there are a lot of students or just a few opting out and not taking this test?
Mr. McHenry, that's a great last question.
Madam Chair, Representative, that is a great question, and it is something that we are seeing more of parents opting their students out of these exams. In terms of repercussions or penalties or how that impacts. I think the way that we look at it now are how those scores are calculated and how we use those for accountability measures for our federal accountability system. I believe right now one of the pieces of ESSA is that if a student is not taking the exam and opting out, that that would count against their proficiency score. Mm-hmm. And so schools that do see more students opting out, it will be tougher for them to make their proficiency levels, and it could impact poorly on how those schools are performing on assessments. We do try to provide information in terms of the value of our exams. If we through legislation, we did have to create an opt-out form for parents. And part of that is we have outlined what our exams actually do in terms of being aligned to the standards, the importance of exams or what they're utilized for, so that if a parent is choosing to opt their student out, that they have full information. We feel that parents should have the right to opt out if they would like to do so, but we want to make sure that they have the proper information as well. But in terms of the penalty of that, I think that's more of how the school would be rated in terms of meeting their proficiency goals.
Thank you to both of you for taking time to answer our questions and to give your presentations, both of you. We'll continue to work with you. And, again, I know how much effort is put into preparing the MCAs and has been for a number of years. And I can't thank you enough for that endeavor. Because it is, federal accountability, state accountability, and I think we've learned a lot from this OLA report, and we'll continue to work on this. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.